With me now on Fresh Air is journalist Victoria Brownworth, who believes that a lot of the children who are reported as missing and who it's presumed were kidnapped are actually working the streets as juvenile prostitutes. Kids who run away from home to escape sexual abuse, or kids who are thrown out of the home by their parents, sometimes turn to prostitution as a way of making enough money to survive. In their desperation and naivete, they frequently don't realize how they are endangering themselves. Victoria Brownworth has written a series of articles on juvenile prostitution and runaways, including pieces in the City Paper, the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Washington Post, and Los Angeles Times. She's currently writing a book on the subject. The working title is Lost in America. The book is based in part on her interviews with juvenile prostitutes in Philadelphia. Victoria Brownworth, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Hi, nice to be here again.
Why have you been researching the subject of juvenile prostitution?
I had gotten involved in writing about it about a year and a half ago. There was something that happened in Philadelphia. An alleged kiddie porn ring in Kensington was exploded, and 16 men were charged in that case. A lot of the charges were dropped. A lot of the charges were not connected, but it opened up a whole idea of kids between the ages of 8 and 17 as prostitutes. These kids were boys particularly, and I had gone to try and interview some of them and started writing about it and reviewed another book that had been written that I felt was not a good book about the subject, that I felt really didn't deal with the issues at all, and decided to write about it. So that's really how I got started in it.
Do you think juvenile prostitution is more invisible than adult prostitution is?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think for a whole lot of reasons, the major reason being that people just don't want to think about it. Nobody wants to think that maybe their daughter or their son is out prostituting, whether they're living at home or whether they're living on the street. I think that it's very difficult to think of innocent children doing that sort of thing.
More attention than ever, it seems, is being paid now to sexual abuse of children and the abduction of children. How do you see juvenile prostitution fitting into that?
Well, I think that it fits in a variety of ways. I think that children who have been sexually abused are more apt to confuse love and sex, and more apt to be confused about what adult power means in their lives. And I think that escaping parents who have sexually abused you and going out to something else but not knowing what it's going to be, you're looking for whatever kind of love or affection you can find. And it's very easy to confuse sex with that. And when you're working for survival, I think that any kind of favor that someone does for you seems like love, seems like caring. And I think that that's how a lot of kids get involved in it.
You've actually spoken to a lot of kids about how they did get involved in it. Can you share some of the stories that you were told about how they entered that life?
Well, a large number of the children that I've spoken with, the teenagers that I've spoken with, have been sexually abused or physically abused as in their own homes, and have either been runaways or thrown out of their homes at very young ages. Most of them got involved in prostitution because they didn't have any money, because it was the first thing that was there, because they either left a smaller place or a larger place and went into the city, and somebody said, you know, hey, want to make $5? And they said, yeah, because I haven't eaten today or whatever. I think that kids are very easy targets for things like this. Just my own experience as a teenager in Philadelphia, I think that it's very easy to get caught up in that kind of approval that adults give, even if it's a sexual approval. It's still, when you're going through that period of adolescence where you don't really know who you are, you really don't know where you're going, you have a lot of emotional and psychic confusion, and someone comes up and says, boy, I really like you, you know, I'd really like to spend some time with you, and what's more, I want to pay you for it. That seems like the kind of approval that a lot of kids aren't getting from their parents.
So that kind of approval and flattery opens the door into prostitution sometimes.
Exactly.
So do you think that from the interviews that you've done with teenagers, that most kids who get involved in prostitution do it through being invited in by a pimp?
Invited in by a pimp or invited in by other kids. you know, when you're on the street, you're looking for friends. You're looking for somebody to hang out with, someone to be with. All kids are looking for that anyway, if they're living at home or not living at home. And it's very easy to get caught up in that lifestyle. It's very exciting, or it seems to be very exciting. And statistically, the longer kids are on the street, the harder it is to break them of prostitution, because they're very caught up in that demi-monde life.
How much of juvenile prostitution do you think there is in Philadelphia? Is there any way of finding that out?
Well, it's really difficult to know. Last year, in 1984, only 20 kids were arrested for prostitution in Philadelphia. 17 of them were girls, 3 of them were boys. It's hard for me to believe that there were only 20 kids prostituting in all of Philadelphia. Comparably, only one arrest was made for drunken driving of a juvenile. When you think about how many accidents there are caused by kids drunk driving, I think that you can compare those things and extend the statistics out to what they probably really are. I would say there are probably at least 1,000 kids in Philadelphia in the center city area, that is the major prostitution area, who are prostituting, who are either out on the street or working out of a hotel or working out of a massage parlor.
What are the major strips in Philadelphia and the neighborhoods?
The major strip in town is still the center city area, bordered by Spruce Street and Market, particularly between Walnut and Spruce, and around Broad and 12th Streets. There's some up around the Bellevue, but not very much. Most of those people get chased away by the police. there's been a lot of effort to crack down on prostitution in that area. The Washington West Citizens Group has really tried to get the police to be more aware of street prostitutes and keep them off the street. In the past, the Parker Hotel has been very involved as a place where prostitutes either hang out or work out of. Whether the people at the park are aware of that or not, who can say? But it's been a place where I've met several girls who have worked the streets.
What about in the neighborhoods? What are the areas?
The major neighborhood really is Kensington. Germantown is another major area. Germantown more for black kids, Hispanic kids, than for white kids. And Kensington more for white and Hispanic kids. But Kensington particularly is a major, major area of prostitution. I mean, in the summer, there are just so many kids out on the street that you just can't believe it on a Friday or a Saturday night. It's just astonishing.
To find out more about how kids end up on the street and what their lives are like and what being in prostitution leads to for them, you try to interview a lot of the young people who are prostitutes. How did you make contact with them?
Well, the first kids that I met during the reporting I was doing on that alleged kiddie porn ring in Kensington. And I just literally rode my bicycle up and down Frankfurt and Kensington Avenues looking for kids, looking for pockets of kids, and just going up to them and trying to talk to them. Most of them wouldn't talk to me. And then I found a group of boys and girls between the ages of 11 and 15 who would talk to me. And they introduced me to some other kids. And as I got better known in that area, more people would talk to me. I was known as being okay, that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't police and I wasn't a social worker, and I wasn't trying to tell them to live differently and that I'd take them out to lunch. So those were things that got known about me after a period of time. But it took a while to get comfortable with those kids in that area and for them to get comfortable with me.
Did they initially treat you almost like a trick, where if you wanted something from them, in this case information, you'd have to pay?
Absolutely. And it's really funny how sometimes you will be talking to someone and they'll really be giving you a lot of information, and then all of a sudden we'll snap back into that. You're getting too close to them, and all of a sudden they'd start treating you like a trick again. And it's kind of shocking in a way. It was shocking for me because I really, I guess, had that to serve with love kind of attitude that I'm going to win these kids over, I'm going to get them off the street. And you really can't take that attitude. It's not fair to them, and it's not fair to yourself either, because they're going to do what they need to do for themselves. And if you can't offer them an alternative, then you really have no business saying, don't do this.
So you made a point of not preaching to them while you were...
No.
What did you tell them you wanted to write about them?
I wanted to write about their lives and why their lives were the way they were, and, you know, what they felt their futures were, if they felt that they had a future. Like a lot of adolescents like I was, like, you know, just about every adolescent I've met, they weren't real sure about what they wanted to do. Some were more sure than others. But what was consistently true was that they had no means to that end, that even if they thought they could get to another point, they didn't know how to get there. No resources whatsoever, and no real value system.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Victoria Brownworth, who's a Philadelphia-based journalist who's written several articles on missing children and juvenile prostitution, and she's currently working on a book on that subject as well. You had said before that a lot of kids get into this because they've left home or they've been thrown out of home, and they need some kind of adult approval, and they're going to get it from the pimp that offers them an in into prostitution. Are there any independents working? Did most of the kids who you spoke with have a pimp?
Almost all the girls that I spoke with did. It's more usual for boys to be independent than girls. But what usually happens is that boys will be independent for a while, and then they'll meet a group of girls and they'll start pimping the girls. A lot of the boys who are definitely on the street, living on the street, end up pimping girls who are on the street. It's a real cyclical kind of situation where you're so caught up in that world that there's really doesn't seem to be any other way to survive. And with it, there's petty crime, and there's drugs, and there are other various things that are attendant to prostitution, like making movies, making tapes, dancing in go-go bars, working in massage parlors, things like that. It's all very much interconnected.
If a girl wants out, is she likely to be able to get out?
It's real difficult. I think that it's incredibly difficult if she's attached to a pimp. Her choices are to go home to her parents, if she has parents or a parent, to go to some kind of social service agency, to go to the police, none of which are really alternatives, I think, that many of these kids would consider. They're not things that they particularly want to do. They're not going to voluntarily go to the police unless they're really in deep trouble. Most of them are not as aware of whatever social services are out there for them as they should be. And the other thing is that there aren't as many social services as there used to be. And there are going to be less and less as time goes on, if the new federal budget is to be believed. The first thing that goes are services to children, and especially to teenagers. In Philadelphia, there have been less and less groups over the years that take care of kids or that offer help to runaways. And those places don't see as many of the runaways as there really are, because they're just, they get caught by the street before they get to the social service agency. Somebody else gets them first.
I think it's fair to say that most adults are pretty horrified at the thought of an adult buying the sexual favors of an 11-year-old. And I can't imagine what an 11 or 12-year-old girl or boy would think about sex if they entered prostitution before they had even completed puberty. Were you able to talk with them about that and to get some idea of what they thought adults were really like or sex was really about?
Well, I think that they have a very distorted view of what sex is about, and I think that they become addicted to sex because they can't distinguish between sex as we as adults know it and sex as affection, approval, a way to make a living, a way to survive. It's all caught up in all sorts of things. And it teaches them to be extraordinarily manipulative so that when you take a child off the street and put her or him in a, say, in a group home situation or a foster care situation, it's very true that those kids are very seductive, that they are sexually inappropriate, that they will try and seduce adults around them or manipulate adults around them in a sexual way, which just allows the adult to blame the child again. These kids are viewed as bad kids. You know, they've been prostitutes, and only someone who really didn't care about herself or himself would be a prostitute. The level of self-esteem that these kids have is below zero. I mean, it's just non-existent.
How informed did the kids you talked to seem to be about the risks that they were really exposing themselves? And I'm thinking of sexually transmitted diseases, and I'm also thinking of crime, you know, getting mugged, and pregnancy, of course.
They're certainly aware of it. They certainly talk about it. A lot of the girls have gotten pregnant, had abortions. A number of the girls that I've spoken with have gotten pregnant and had babies. Sometimes that's a way out of prostituting, but it depends on what your resources are, how close you are to your pimp, that kind of thing. All of them have had some kind of sexually transmitted disease. Most of them are doing some kind of drug, some alcohol, are malnourished, if not undernourished, and don't really seem to think about what those consequences are for them for later, because they're living day by day. And there wasn't a single girl that I talked to who hadn't been beaten at some point, either by a pimp or a trick. And most of the boys had also been injured in some way.
When they get older and become an adult, what happens? Are they thrown out by their pimp because they're not young enough to supply the right kind of specialized service anymore?
Well, it's hard to know what happens to them when they get older. A lot of them don't get older. A lot of them die. There are an awful lot of kids who die in the United States every year, whose bodies never get claimed, who get buried in potter's fields. And people just aren't aware of it. They don't pay attention to it. They don't think about it. And they really are victims of this whole wide range of things, of crime, of tricks, of pimps, of drugs, of all of it, of starvation and exposure.
The question of the decriminalization of prostitution is still a pretty controversial one, and a lot of people argue that an adult should have a right to use their body to make a living if they so choose with another consenting adult who's willing to pay for their services. And I wonder what you think of the decriminalization of prostitution for adults, and also what you think the law should be for people who are still minors.
Well, I think it's a very complex question. In Nevada, where it is legal and where it is controlled, the women are, yes, they are living as prostitutes and they are making money from it, but they are living horrific lives. They're not a whole lot better off than if they were working on the street. It might be a little cleaner and a little neater, but that's about it. I spoke with a woman journalist from Germany a couple of months ago, and in Germany, prostitution has been legal for a long time. And it's the same situation. The state is taking a big chunk of the money out of that. decriminalization is fine as an idea for adults, and if adults want to work that through to their own best interest, that's fine. I think it's unacceptable for children. I think that we should be caring for our children somehow. There should be programs to take care of kids on the street. There's a lot of talk, especially when it's cold weather, about the homeless. There's no mention of the homeless who are youth. There's only mention of the people who've been let out of mental institutions, who are living on grates, but you don't think of them as children. There are an awful lot of kids out on the street who are living on the street, who are eating garbage, who are pulling things out of trash cans, and they are targets in a way that the adults are not, so that someone sees a kid doing that, picks up that kid, says, "Want to have a hot meal," takes them, feeds them, and they're theirs. You know, they just have bought that kid by buying them lunch. I mean, I just can't. I could have taken 50 kids home with me for the price of lunch at McDonald's. I mean, it's just, it's a horrifying thing. It really is. And I think that that fact can't be impressed on people enough.
So do you think it should be, that it should remain illegal for minors? And,
yeah.
And if so, is, you know, is prison or paying a fine the appropriate solution for the problem?
The solution is not to penalize the child for survival. The solution is to offer an alternative. But the police should not be looking the other way. People should not be looking the other way. I mean, we walk by and step over people on grates. We don't think about it because there are just so many of them. What are you going to do? And that's, and we've formulated a way of dealing with that issue. Just as I think people have formulated a way of dealing with prostitution, as long as those people are not standing in your doorway of your apartment building, then fine, let them do what they want, even if they're 12 years old, even if they're 15. And, you know, yes, it's a little more awful if they're 12 than if they're 15, but it's when they're children, it's just not fair. It's depriving them of a future.
So you're suggesting that one alternative would be more homes or halfway houses or whatever for runaways, more kind of social service type agencies to deal with them. But do you think that most kids who've run away from home or who've been turned out of homes would be interested in something that's social service-y? Because I think a lot of people, if they run away from home, are going to reject that kind of official gesture.
It doesn't have to be made as an official gesture. It doesn't have to be made as this person is being paid to take care of me. In the better social service agencies dealing with issues of runaways, it's dealt with a lot better. There are people who, you know, basically care about kids, and that's why they're there. But the resources are so small. If you can only house 25 kids and there are 1,000 kids out there, then you're not even putting a Band-Aid on it. You know, you're not even coming close to it. I think that most of these kids are looking for someone to take care of them, and they will take whoever comes along. But better someone who can offer them a future than someone who's just going to be manipulating them for their own benefit, you know.
Is it an issue that you think is being addressed yet?
It's not an issue that's being addressed at all. The only people who are addressing it are the people involved in social welfare programs or people who are concerned about youth. And you can count those people, you know, in each city practically on the fingers of your hands. I think that what also isn't being addressed is how these kids get on the street. They get on the street because their parents either have tossed them out or their parents have made them so unhappy that they've run away. And I'm not talking about unhappy because you couldn't have the car on Friday night or unhappy because you didn't get a new pair of jeans. I'm talking about unhappy because your parents are alcoholics or drug addicts or beat you all the time, or your father's molesting you, or your stepfather or your mother's boyfriend, or someone is doing something really awful to you and you just can't cope with it.
The impression I got from one of your articles is that you think that there's almost a scam developing around missing children, like a missing children industry is what you called it. What do you find questionable about the way missing children are being handled now in by by the missing children industry as you describe it?
Well, I find just about everything questionable about it. I think that it is a scam of major proportions. I think that the scam is that the children who are missing are not missing because somebody scooped them off the street, you know, and taken them to, you know, make porno movies with them, but because they're missing because they've run away from home, they've been thrown out of their homes, or because one psychotic parent or semi-psychotic parent has stolen that child away from the other parent. Those are the kids who are missing. In the last 5 years in the United States, less than 100 children each year have been termed missing, as in missing for reasons unrelated to those three things I just mentioned. Now, that's nothing near the 2 million figure that we always hear about. And you see posters everywhere, you see paper bags, you see this, that, and the other thing. Every time one of those kids is found, what do we find out about them? That they were kidnapped by another parent, or that they ran away from home, or that they were thrown out by their parent. And, you know, we don't find that they've been kidnapped off the street by some crazy person, some, you know, psychotic child molester. We find that it's something that relates back to the family.
So do you think unnecessary paranoia is being spread?
Yeah, and I think that we're causing a tremendous amount of fear in young children. I have a nephew who's 3 who, you know, is already able to talk about, you know, people who could get me. A friend's nephew who is 6 who is at school is afraid of people who might steal him off the street. You know, what are we teaching our children? That you know, the scary people are always out there to get you?
Well, do you see any opportunism at work here? What do you think that they're, you know, if you find
it's
this...
It's a good tax write-off. It's a real good tax write-off.
For whom?
For everybody from, you know, ARA services to the people who print your bags to now Congress has passed a bill that missing children will be on all of their little pieces of paper that float out that we all already know we're paying billions of dollars for. I think it's a way to for services to say, look at us, we are so wonderful, we really care about this issue, and at the same time get a tax write-off so that there's an idea set up in the mind of the consumer that, boy, these people are terrific. They're really trying. They're really trying to do something about this terrible problem. But it just helps perpetuate the problem. It helps fuel the hysteria. And it doesn't address the real problem, which is, why are these kids not at home? You know, where did they go? Where did they really go?
What do you think is an appropriate way of addressing that, though? It's a hard one to address.
I think that an appropriate way of addressing it would be to say, that if kids are being abused, that something be done about it. 3 days ago in Philadelphia, a baby girl was found with her head crushed in a North Philadelphia neighborhood. And everybody says, oh, well, North Philadelphia, what do you expect? You know, it's a poor neighborhood. But so you hear about it in North Philadelphia. You don't hear about it in Chestnut Hill. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And I think that... people don't remember that it is the parents who are killing their children. It is the relatives who are killing their children. It is the people who know the children who are killing them. Most of the child deaths in the United States are due to abuse of some form. There has been case after case after case of people who go on television saying, someone kidnapped my child, someone killed my child. And it turns out that it was, in fact, the parent. Some of those cases have been here in Pennsylvania in the last year and a half. The most repellent, I think, case was a case that happened in Minnesota this summer, where a man in a small town in Minnesota had galvanized all of this help, all of this effort from all of his neighbors to help find his daughter who just disappeared, his 13-year-old daughter, who allegedly disappeared on her way home from school. 200,000 flyers were sent out all around the country with her picture on it. It turned out that he had murdered her and he'd been abusing her for 5 years. I think that there are an awful lot of cases like that. And I think that it's important that we do be aware of the kids like Adam Walsh who were just, you know, scooped up and killed by a crazy person. But that they are the few cases, and we really need to not slight the other kids. who are being abused by their families. The family has been perceived in a way in America that has allowed them to get away with that, especially the white middle-class two-parent family. It's supposed to be a problem of the poor, but as we're finding, as child sexual abuse becomes more of an issue, that's not the case at all, that everyone is being abused. I mean, that such a huge percentage of kids are being abused, that 1 out of 3 girls and 4 out of 10 boys, that's an awful lot of kids. It really is. And who's doing it? Not the stranger on the street, but the parent or the teacher or the babysitter, but somebody the child knows.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for sharing some of your research.
Thanks.
And my guest has been journalist Victoria Brownworth, and she's written a series of articles on juvenile prostitution, runaways, missing children. She's currently writing a book on that subject, too, and the working title is Lost in America. Victoria Brownworth is a Philadelphia-based journalist, and thank you again for talking with us.
Thank you.